I'm Tamara Dia, and I am this week's guest on the Kicks and Shit Show, so check it out.
What's good, everybody? It's your boy Gerard and your girl Gabby. We are back for episode 43 of the Kicks and Shit Show. Bah, 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 bah.
That was a crisp one.
I knew you were likely going to throw the rap sign out, so I was like, all right, let me go ahead and just go ahead and get my rap myself.
You wanted to beat me to the punch, is what you're saying.
Yes, like, yes.
Kind of like me asking you, Gerard, what's going on in your
I knew that was coming. See, that's the thing. You always want to one-up one another. Let me ask him first. Let me ask her first. These streets are, you know, they're going well. It is the halfway point of the NBA season, so, you know, that's good in a way. You know, no All-Stars we discussed before, which is, you know, sad from that perspective, but also, ain't nobody trying to go to Atlanta and get COVID, so I'm good on that. Otherwise, you know, I'm just out here grinding. It's March, and we're getting closer to spring, maybe, kind of, sort of. Not sure.
Ish. Yeah. Like that sneak sense of, like, hope that we get. It's always like that first week of March, because I know in Jersey that we do a little bit of a like mock St. Patty's Day.
Oh, yeah. Canceled this Hoboken St. Patty's Day.
A little,
yeah,
leprechaun action. Leprechaun was canceled due to lack of hustle, but and bonus points if you understand that reference, which I think you do. But I just think it's like, it's always a weird break in the weather. Like, there could be snow on the ground and it's like a 60 degree day. We all get really excited. You see a lot of arms and knees and shorts come out. I'm like, let's not get crazy.
There's
always that one hero that's like running in a tank top in the middle of March, and I'm like, relax,
people.
Like, you're not impressing anybody. But after that, there's like that crazy dip back down low. So
yeah,
I can't be too excited about it yet.
Yeah.
But, like, we had the windows open earlier, and that was a wild time.
Wild. Well, look, it's also on the sporting calendar, right? Spring training's happening right now. It's, you know, we are, it's, and, you know, sadly, it's also, it's a year, right, of COVID. Like, March is when everything, I mean, remember the NBA shut down? That's when everything sort of just, like, grinding to a halt. It's been a year. It does seem as though things are starting to look better. More and more people are getting vaccinated. The number of appointments and availabilities for vaccines have increased. So that's a good thing. It's looking like, cross our fingers, if everybody keeps being good, don't fumble the ball now at the goal line, that by summer, we might be back to regular. Hopefully.
Yeah, I don't know if regular schmegular is what we're going to be back to in summer.
Regular schmegular. By the way, have we talked about that? Where did I read it? But it is a thing that certain people do when they take words, they put SH on the front of it. Like, I don't know where I read it. I'll have to look it up and bring it back to you next time. But it's a funny thing.
I mean, all right, Gerard, I've never heard this before. That just seems weird to me. I don't know if I like this. Just put the
I mean, you do it all the time.
I call you Sherrod.
You do.
That's going to be your alter ego, Gerard. You're going to get like a drunk dial from me one day. I'm going to be like, what's up, Sherrod?
And I'll be like, goodbye.
That's exactly how that conversation is going to go down. For those who do not believe, this is exactly what would happen.
1,000%. Gabby, what is going on in those streets?
Well, Gerard, I'm glad that you asked. aside from things being pretty typical, I don't get to see the streets that often.
That's right.
Like I said, the snow is melting off the street. There's a lot going on. You know, it's International Women's Day coming up, I am very excited about.
It is also Women's History Month, so yeah.
Yes, you know, all about the ladies this month. Mm-hmm. And I know I don't want to give away too much about today's guest, but we are very excited to have her on.
We are.
But yeah, aside from that.
What if someone listening to this and was like, wait, are they having her on? Like, right? Can you say, well, folks, that would be quite a pull for us if we got her.
And her, if you're listening.
Yes, by all means.
Oh, we'd love to have you on the show. Hopefully you like sneakers too.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I think that things are looking hopeful, and I think that's always something that's great. I think that it's been a crazy week in the sneaker news cycle with stuff that we're going to talk a little bit about more. But I think that, you know, maybe the tides are changing for me, Gerard, and I'm going to take W's now on the sneakers app.
Well, of course.
Fair thing to ask.
Of course, everyone knows what we're talking about is the blockbuster Bloomberg Businessweek article that we discussed last week, which then led to, right, some little more investigative news and a little bit of a scuttlebutt amongst the sneaker community where people said, well, wait a minute. This kid, West Coast Joe, and remember I said last week, I was like, I don't know, his name's like West Coast Joe or something, because I couldn't remember in the article. I was right. Thank God. His mom turns out to be a high-level VP at Nike, and, you know, that seems a little strange, kind of conflict of interest, perhaps. And then all of a sudden, she steps down, and it's like the sneaker community just went nuts. But here's kind of where I want to go with this conversation, Gabby.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, and I talked to Matt Powell, who is someone that is very plugged into the footwear and sneaker industry from the business side. He helps a lot of these brands and companies look into the data and the analytics. And it's interesting because at the end of the day, when I talk to Matt, it's never about emotion, about how he feels about something. He's like, that may be how someone feels, but the data doesn't support that. Like, that is just patently not true based on the data that I have. And so I asked him today, I said, you know, because the whole big thing that I see here is that this resale market, which we rail about all the time, particularly, let me be clear, the people who take advantage of the resale market, right? Because our good friends and sponsors of America's favorite segment, Shoe and Tell, Another Lane, the premier digital marketplace for dope kicks, they are in the resale market. However, they are part of the community first and then resellers, right? It's a very big difference than what this West Coast Joe guy was doing, which is strictly, I'm just reselling for pure profit and trying to gouge people.
Total exploitation.
Absolutely. It's complete exploitation. So I said to Matt, I go, if you're Nike or you're Adidas or anybody, a resale market's got to help you indirectly, right? Because again, my thesis was, well, you put out these limited exclusive pairs that everybody wants to get. You know there's going to be more demand than you have pairs. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. They go into the resale market and people pay 3, 4, 5x, depending, sometimes 10x, depending on what the shoe is, for these shoes. But what happens is people want to feel a part of the brand anyway, and they get steered into, you know, other more accessible products from a Nike and Adidas and New Balance, whoever. Matt says to me, in very Matt fashion, there is no data that supports that. He goes, the average consumer, sneaker consumer, has no idea a sneaker resale market exists. I was like, Matt. He's like, it's the same thing I do when I'm having basketball conversations with people, right? I always operate from the, obviously I cover the league, but if I wasn't covering the league, I'd be I'm a diehard fan, right? Like, I am deep in the weeds. The casual fan has no idea about half the things I'm talking about because they don't watch it the way I do. Same with sneakers, right? If you're not into this, how would you know there's a sneaker resale market? If you're not, because you're not looking for collabs. And I was like, huh, interesting. Very, very interesting. And Matt said that he saw no actual benefit to Joe for having his mom be there. He's like, what state secrets is he giving her that he can get to? And I was like, well, what about other plugs? Well, what's that got to do with her? Like, she has no bearing on this. I'm like, but I thought it was interesting that she decided to step down, right? And Nike hasn't said anything officially about it that I've seen, but I thought the whole thing was interesting.
I think it's fascinating. I think there is insider trading happening hot off the press. I mean, if this happened in the stock market, you know what I mean? Like,
people would be like, what?
This would be an actual investigation. So I'm curious to see how this unfolds. And honestly, if it continues to unfold, or if Nike has the same publicist as the Kardashians and this is shut down real quick.
Yeah. They haven't said anything thus far. So
no. And I think it's smart for Nike to not, you know what I mean? I think it's, let's wait until a lot of this chatter that people like us and others in the culture and the industry are having, because at the end of the day, for us, it's all speculation, right?
These
are
no
thoughts,
idea.
Opinions, mm-hmm. Try to understand the perspective, try to understand even why our friend West Coast Joe, not actually our friend, we've never met him. Just want to put a little disclaimer at the bottom of the screen here. But why did he even feel like he would needed to chase that clout? Like,
well, yeah.
Come on, kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Stay in school. Don't chase the clout.
I mean, my man, not worth it. You had a lucrative business making all this cash. If you just shut the hell up, nobody would know about it. Like, I mean, yep. Why put your business? See, it's one of my things I always say. Why are you putting your business out here in these streets? See? Snitches get stitches. This is what happens.
That's
you know?
What I say. Mm-hmm.
Well, folks, we have a very, very special guest coming up. Gabby did mention International Women's Day is coming up. It is Women's History Month. So, yes, it is a woman, but someone who is very well known in these sneaker streets. So, stay tuned. What's good, everybody? It's your boy Gerard and your girl Gabby. We're back. And, Gabby, we are not alone. We are joined by, and let you know, I always get, you know, excited when I introduce people and like sort of like run through like who they are. So this woman is a host. You may have seen her on Complex, MTV, E! News Red Carpets. She is a sneakerhead. You may see her on Instagram doing lives, all kinds of things. She's an influencer and all around badass female. Tamara Dia, welcome.
What an intro. I love it.
Right? That was a good one. I mean, you're our guest for International Women's Day. So, like,
amazing.
We had to give your full resume because you have so much that you're bringing to this conversation already. I'm so hyped about this.
I appreciate that. Can you introduce me every time I walk into a room? That was great.
No problem. Just give me 10% and we are good to go.
Yeah, pretty
my manager, who else?
So, Tamara, we obviously are super excited to have you on because you're someone who anybody who is adjacent to this industry or involved in it directly, they know you. They've seen you all over the place. And so I want to start from the beginning. When did you first fall in love with sneakers?
I guess my love affair with sneakers actually started when I was a kid. So I grew up as a tomboy. I was the only girl in my neighborhood. So I guess the way to kind of connect with the guys, because I played sports too. So aside from being good at sports, it was to talk about sneakers. So very early on, I learned about sneakers and just kind of fell in love that way. It started with Jordans, you know, because back then and still to this day, obviously, you know, that's what everyone wanted was a pair of Jordans. So, and again, that kind of goes line in line with just playing sports as well. So, yeah. And I have brothers, so I got the hand-me-downs the whole night. And it just kind of ballooned into this somehow.
And that literally is like not even like 1/8 of your sneaker collection. That's like...
a very small window.
So you said you played a lot of sports growing up. What were your sports of choice and what were you like the best at?
Well, I'm Middle Eastern, so I kind of was born with a soccer ball attached to my foot. So soccer was definitely my predominant sport. I played a little bit of basketball, tennis. I mean, I've also played football. Like, this is back before, you know, there came a point where guys weren't allowed to touch you. So I got attached very early. So I was always, you know, picked pretty early on, you know, above other guys. And that was kind of, you know, fun for me and sucky for them. But I could throw a catch. So that was kind of, you know, that's how you earned your stripes on the playground.
So when you were young on the playground and like you were that girl, like, I mean, what was young Tamara like? Were you like talking shit? Like, yeah, no, that's they picked me because I'm good. Like, I got this.
I guess we all kind of talk shit, right?
Absolutely.
I was, much to my mother's dismay, who really wanted me to be a girly girl, I just wasn't. I was just like a tomboy. I loved playing and I loved winning. And I grew up in a competitive family. We were all athletic. So winning just kind of came along with the shit talking.
Yeah, yeah. And so obviously you played a lot of sports. And then, you know, as you, you know, you grow up, you go to school, you go to college, whatever. How did the transition from, you know, sports, sneaker love transition into content creation and then being, you know, I'm pretty good at this. I'm going to be on camera talking about this stuff to people.
Well, as a kid, I always wanted to be on camera. Like I was a ham growing up. I was the only girl. So I always wanted, you know, I had to fight for my spot. And I think for some reason, I gravitated towards being on camera. But, you know, when we were kids, there was, or when I was a kid, there was no internet, there was no YouTube, there was no, you know, so that became an avenue that I explored later, you know, when it started popping. And I started as an actress, actually. So when I was a kid, I really wanted to be an actress. But again, growing up in a Middle Eastern family,
they were not happening.
They're like, Tamara, you will be a lawyer, a doctor, or an engineer. And I was like, I don't want to be any of those. So the only way I could kind of like justify going to school, going to college, and doing something I wanted and still appeasing my parents was to do journalism. Because I was always a writer. I would write plays. I would perform it for my parents, you know, and that kind of went line in line with me wanting to be an actress. So I was like, what can I study that will make my parents still pay for school? Or for a piece of school. I was on scholarship. So I was like, what could I do that would make them still support me and will appease me, my personal interests as well? And I decided on broadcast journalism because I could still be on camera, mm-hmm. which appeased that side of me, and I could do the journalism, which would appease, I mean, and I was also interested in journalism as well. So I studied broadcast journalism in school, which naturally, obviously, you know, I feel like I'm one of the only people that actually does for a living what they studied in school.
That's so true.
Because I feel like that's pretty rare now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was acting for a while, and then I was getting pretty disheartened by the hustle of it, because anyone knows it's a really hard path. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out what I could do that would make me happy, aside from busting my butt waiting tables and auditioning all the time. And I was a big fan of Complex. I would go on the website all the time. And this is kind of when YouTube was really mm-hmm. becoming, I mean, YouTube was already around, but it was kind of becoming this really big platform for a lot of people. And Complex was just pivoting towards video at this point. So before this, they were a magazine, mm-hmm. became a blog, and then they started, you know, kind of diving into the digital space in terms of video. So I was like, what can I do? I'm looking for a new job. So I went on the career tab for Complex. And just for full disclosure, I did that for a lot of sites. So I was doing it for High Snobiety. Back then, there was Fader. It's like basically mm-hmm. every blog mm-hmm. into that I was, you know, looking at anyway. It's like, let me see what possible jobs I can do. So Complex was looking for a video host. And I was like, that's my job. And I applied. And I got pretty far, and then they declined me, and they said no. This was in 2014. They said no. I was crushed, like crushed, because I knew this was my job. I knew it was perfect for me. I was like, I'm into sneakers. I'm into music. I'm into sports. I'm a chick. I'm on camera. Like, why did they not give this to me? And I really, truly couldn't understand it. And for the record, the position was in New York. At the time, I was living in L.A. So a whole year goes by. I'm still out here hustling. And then by happenstance, a friend of mine is at a dinner, and she's sitting next to someone who is from Complex. And they explain that they are now looking to do video content from L.A. So basically, that job now opened up in L.A. So I found out, and you better believe the very next day, I went right back to the job site. I applied, and then I reached out to the person who I'd been talking to the year prior and was like, yo, look, I live in LA. Give me another shot. So they gave me another shot. I did 5 rounds of auditions, and I ended up getting the job. So it wasn't when I planned to get it, but I did get it, and it actually worked out even better because I got to stay in LA. So, you know, I have a friend that says, not on schedule, but always on time. So mm-hmm. how I felt my hosting career kind of started. It wasn't on schedule, but it was on time. So that Complex obviously was a huge platform for me. That's where I first started really developing my knack for, you know, online journalism. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot there. That's a lot of people don't know that we wrote all of our own scripts. A lot of the stories I did, I pitched. I was deeply part of the editing process, the production process. Like, we weren't just people talking on a camera and saying, you know, what anyone wanted to say. Like, we legitimately had our hands in every piece of our videos that went out. So kind of like a wrecking ball in terms of content creation at that point. And I learned a lot as I was going. Yeah, so that was kind of how I started. Very long-winded, but there it is.
Love it.
I love that. And I think there's a level of self-awareness too, you know, that you knew that this was meant for you. And even if you didn't know what that timing was, I mean, I think that's amazing to hear just about that, because I think a lot of people see that people in their dream jobs and they don't realize the amount of work that goes into it too. And all the work that you were doing behind the scenes, not just in the journey, but to get to that first job. So once you started at Complex, how did things kind of change for you from there?
I mean, it changed a lot because I had a platform and I had a voice at that point. So, you know, and I got to be submersed in this world that I loved so much. You know, I legitimately would wake up every morning and look at the blogs, and I was on them daily. So to become a voice on that, you know, blog like that was huge for me, you know, because I think we're all kind of looking for a way to, you know, fit in, or, you know, get in where you fit in type thing. And I felt like I finally got in where I fit in. So, you know, obviously I expanded my network and the people I was meeting, the people I was interviewing, the, you know, the experiences I was living. I got to travel a lot. I got to interview some people that I really, truly admired, the artists that I love. So it was, it opened up my world in a really wonderful way. I met a lot of people that to this day are my best friends from Complex. Yeah, it was really awesome. And then I was there for 2.5 years. And then one day I was sitting at my desk writing a script and I get a call from my manager and he says, "Hey, MTV called and they want to fly you to New York for an audition." I didn't know what it was for. I just knew that, you know, MTV was interested in me. And I was like, you know, we grew up watching TV. And which was really actually funny and perhaps ironic, you know, when Complex News was really, really like having its moment, mm-hmm. a lot of people told us that we were like the modern day MTV News, mm-hmm. you know, because it was obviously, it was cool, you know, like we were our own little characters on this news show and it was so submersed in the culture, you know. I would get stopped all the time, you know, we were, you know, recognizable in our own right for the work that we were doing. And that felt really good. So yeah, when MTV called, it was, it felt like it also, again, felt right, not on schedule, but on time. So I flew to New York and auditioned for, MTV. And again, it was multiple rounds of auditions. So I was flying back and forth from LA to New York. And obviously it was a much larger scale. I was shooting in studios and on Times Square. And then, yeah, it was like another one of those moments where I knew in the audition I was going to book it because I just, it felt right. I don't know how to explain it. You just,
yeah, when you know.
100% agree. 100%.
Yeah. And so I was literally on the plane, heading back to LA. It was taxiing off. I get a call from my manager and he said, "They're booking you." And I said, "Yeah, I figured."
And it was not best response.
Yeah, I didn't even, and not even from like a arrogant place. It was more of just like a knowing, like, yeah. I know that I'm right for this job. So everything, my life switched up real quick. I had to be back in New York to move back cross country within 3 weeks, which is a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I also had to leave a position and that I loved at Complex. I genuinely loved it. And I loved the people I was there with. So like to kind of switch gears so quickly, and I wanted to do it respectfully. Yeah, so my life changed pretty quickly. I moved to New York cross country and I left Complex on a Friday. It was my last day. I was shooting in MTV that Sunday. So there was no down. I jumped right in. So
you didn't even get a weekend.
I did not. No. And quite frankly, I didn't even get a day because I was traveling during that day.
Right.
We all know it takes 9 hours yep. to go from LA to New York because of time change.
Exactly. So
it was literally landed, went to sleep, maybe had dinner, woke up the next morning, went straight to the studio. So it was very, very, very fast paced.
And anybody who's done that cross country move, and I've done it twice, that it's no joke. Like, it is no joke. You
yeah.
know, you touched on so much there. And Complex, of course, is where that's where I first discovered you. I think that's where Gabby probably first discovered mm-hmm. you as well. And you're right. It's MTV. You guys were the modern day MTV, right? Like it was everything was sort of new and burgeoning. And that's when the YouTube and video, that's when content platforms started realizing, no, video is the thing we need to be doing here. And Complex was ahead of the time there. I do want to go back to something you said, which I find so interesting as myself being the child of immigrant parents. following your dreams, right, and making your family happy is this constant thing that you're like, that you have to battle. What do they say now when they see all of your success and you're doing what you're doing?
Well, look, it's been a long road, and they were, I mean, even at Complex, they didn't really understand, you know, so it's like, they don't know who Lil Uzi Vert is, so I'm like, I didn't know Lil Uzi Vert today. She's just like, they don't know, you know, like, she's like, I don't understand that, English, like, you know, so she doesn't understand that stuff. I'm like, Mom, I you know, I got to, you know, drive around with DJ Khaled today. She's my like, who? She's like, Khaled? Our cousin Khaled? I'm like, nope. Oh, DJ Khaled, he's the big producer. Like, she's like, you know, so they don't understand those things, you know. So it wasn't until I got to MTV, really. Or actually, no, because I covered the Grammys for Complex. Mm-hmm. So being at the Grammys, mm-hmm. even though all the talent I was interviewing, they had no idea who they were.
Right.
It was enough for me. They're like, oh, being on a red carpet, they understood.
They knew that.
Okay.
They knew what the Grammys were.
Mm-hmm.
So for them, they're like, oh, okay, she's putting on a gown now. Like, you know, like, you know, like my daughter, who I've only ever seen in, like, you know, jeans and sneakers, is like, you know, actually trying now to be a woman. You know, so they were excited about that stuff. But, like, they didn't, I think, you know, as you said, you're a child of immigrant parents as well. At the end of the day, they want to brag to their friends, is what I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until I was on MTV and their friends could turn on the channel and see me that was, like, a big moment for them. And they were like, all right, maybe this road that she has been fighting to be on all this time, maybe there's actually something there. And then when I got to E, that was, like, really, like,
oh, she made it.
Yeah, because at that point I'm interviewing, you know, Nicole Kidman and right. Bradley Cooper, and my mom loves her some Bradley Cooper.
Oh.
I don't blame her. She's got good taste.
I know, right? She was like, well, the only other person that I could have interviewed, who I have not yet interviewed, but would have been Brad Pitt. That would have, like, made her, like, so, but Bradley Cooper was enough for her to, like, share that clip with her friends and be like, look at my daughter with Bradley Cooper.
I love it.
Thanks, Mom.
I also love your impersonation of your mother. Hilarious.
She's amazing, by the way. Shout out to you.
Shouts to you, Mom.
One of the things I love that you talk about, too, and because I resonate in my own journey, too, is the pressures of females in the sneaker industry and needing to feel like you fit into a certain box. I have Jewish parents, so you can imagine the pressures of that. And my parents are lovely people, but, you know, Gab, like, it'd be really cute if you wore tennis skirts. I wanted to play hockey. My parents put me in figure skates and an ice skating. Let me tell you how long that one lasted. That long. So I understand that, but I think there's something that you really touch upon about being your authentic self and really owning who you are and seeing how that kind of has transitioned. But the industry that we're in, what are the pressures like? Is there a certain way that you feel like you need to be? Is it a fight against authenticity? Would love to tap more into that.
Yeah, I mean, look, as you said, you're a woman in this space, so you understand that it's not exactly the easiest path for us. I've been in this space for, like, in a visible place for 6 years now. And when I first started, you know, there weren't a lot of women that were visibly in the sneaker space at all. So, you know, I was one of a handful of us in the space. And now you see so many girls and women, you know, with their sneakers and everything, which is dope to see, honestly, because it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's great to feel like we finally have representation. And then there's the other side of it where you're like, you weren't there, you know, so there's, like, that other side of you where you're like, you know, you see these bloggers, for example, on Instagram that up until a year ago had no sneakers on their page, and now suddenly they're all sneakers. So, like, that part of you feels a little inauthentic, mm-hmm. which I don't like. But I do, you know, I see young girls, you know, tapping in, and I genuinely love that. And I think that there's a lot of room for all of us here. So it's great to see. That being said, in terms of authenticity, look, that I think comes across, you know, and especially in social media where there's so much smoke and mirrors, I do feel that people get a sense of whether or not you are an authentic member of that community. And that goes without really having to say anything. You can just feel it. You can see it. So fighting to remain authentic, I think we change, you know, it's like my interests have changed over the last 5 years. I feel like mm-hmm. a lot of interests have changed over the last 5 years. The sneaker world has changed over the last 5 years, and it's gotten to a point where it's getting very frustrating to be part of the sneaker industry because it's not what it used to be. And I'm sure we'll touch on that more when we talk about the Nike scandal, but like, it's a fight to remain authentic, but I think it's also a fight to remain authentic in your daily life, you know, regardless of what industry you're in. It's just, you know, we're all getting bombarded with so much, you know, stimulus every day. So I think we're all just trying to stay as centered as we can.
No, for sure. And you're tapping into so much right there, Tamara. Like, you know, to grow is to evolve, right? Like that's it's to learn. And when we stop doing that, like, well, then you might as well be dead at that point, right? Like you have to keep changing and evolving. And I think that once the authenticity is there, right? And I think that comes through when you are just being that, like being yourself, right? And not trying to ride a wave or a fad. And, you know, you talk about how the sneaker industry has changed. And I feel like, you know, this Nike story is sort of like encapsulates what's going on, right? I mean, I often rail about capitalism often just because, often. Well, just because, look, let's not get it twisted. I understand that it is the system we have and it functions. And let's be clear, for the work I do, I want to be compensated, right? But the way in which it works, it is so vile when it is unregulated. And you see it in every single thing. And let's just look at sneakers because that's the space that we're in. So this Nike story comes out of this sneaker reseller, right? Who is someone who, from everything that the article says, and I didn't do any Instagram dives on him, he doesn't seem to be someone who is like in it for the culture, right? He appears to be someone who's in it as purely a money-making enterprise. Now, I'm not knocking the way anyone wants to make money, right? If you want to make money, do your thing, you do what you gotta do. But the way in which you go about doing it, right? Literally using bots, which won't get us started on that, right? To take away the opportunities from people who, you know, and I know lots of people like growing up like this and just even now who, okay, there's a sneaker I want. I'm going to set aside X amount of dollars in budget. We had TJ Kiesel on a couple episodes ago. She's like, if I want this, I set a budget here, and this is what I'm going to do. So if you know, here's my spending money for this thing and I want it. Okay. You expect to make a reasonable effort to get it when you have no chance. And then you think about, all right, let me figure out this resale market. And depending on what kind of shoe it is, it's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, sometimes 10X the original retail price. What? Like, that is insane. So I want to talk to you about your thoughts on the resale market and then in specifics like this particular Nike story and West Coast Joe.
Well, I'm going to start by saying I'm exhausted by this
story. I'm sure.
For like 3 days straight. I don't know if you saw, but I got dragged on the internet for a tweet that I had.
I did. The first one. Yeah. Because you were supporting the Nike VP, Ann.
Let me be clear. I wasn't supporting her necessarily because I don't actually know whether she was complicit or not. None of us do.
Right.
I was more remarking on the poetic nature of that story. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like at the day, like I am a storyteller in terms of like being a journalist and being a content creator. So for me, it was more of just this story of like, wow, this woman, as we discussed earlier, as Gabby will note too, is that being a woman in this space is not easy. She's been doing it for 25 years and got up to a really high position, which is rare. And then the irony of it coming tumbling down because of her son was what I was remarking on. And let me be clear that the dragging felt very misogynistic because a lot of the people that were coming for me were saying, you're a feminist. This is why feminists, blah, blah, blah. And I was like,
what?
I literally was like, how did, what?
How did we get here?
And I would reread the tweet and I was like, did I make it like that? And I was like, maybe I worded it the wrong way. And I was like, no, I legitimately was just remarking on the fact that like this woman worked her way to the top of a male dominated industry, fact, and got tumbled down because of her son, fact. So, and again, being a woman in this space, I think was made very apparent because I got dragged because I'm a woman in the space remarking on another woman in the space. So my thoughts on the resale industry. I understand that it has become its own economy And if you read the footwear news article that I was interviewed in, I also remarked that I'm never going to knock someone for the way they get their money, as long as it's not hurting anyone. And especially in the times that we're in, you know, people are legitimately just trying to make money to pay rent and situations like that.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of West Coast Joe specifically, he clearly is a young white male who has access and funds that a lot of people do not. So there is a sense of not entitlement. What's the word?
Privilege. There's a level of privilege that he has.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly the word I was looking for. Thank you. There's a sense of privilege that he has that a lot of people do not. So I think that is a part of the story that mm-hmm. we don't necessarily know. And if we want to say even white privilege, that's on the table
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of part of the story that people haven't truly tapped into. But I do think that's part of the story that hit a lot of people to the point that they got that angry. And that so many people, and that the story has become such a huge thing, is because it's kind of in our faces now, right? It was something that we all knew was happening. You see the photos on Instagram
with yep.
the sneakers that we wanted to get, that we were up at 7 a.m. trying to get on Sneakers app and didn't get. And then you see 500 of them sitting behind this kid, who now we learn is the son of a, you know, VP at Nike.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
We have every right to be angry. The optics do not look good. It looks terrible. It looks yeah. terrible from Nike standpoint. It looks terrible from Ann Hebert's standpoint. And it looks terrible from the culture standpoint, quote unquote, that like now this is the type of person that's legitimately kind of showing us what the market is, right? So mm-hmm. we all are allowed to be angry. Every single person. And every single person is allowed to be angry in their own regard from their own angle. I don't think this is going to make the resale market go away. Do you know what I mean? Like people are like, oh, how do you think this is going to change going forward? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to change going forward. Should it change? Yes, absolutely. Like, should I be able to buy a pair of sneakers that I want without having to pay 3, 4, 5, 6 times retail? Absolutely. And that's the part of this whole mess that I get so frustrated with. And I know that sounds kind of, innocuous as I'm sitting in front of a bunch of sneakers.
No, not at all. Not to us.
I believe, trust me, not to us.
But anyone that loves sneakers understands that, like, it's not, you know, we have a lot of sneakers because we love them.
And we buy them.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, the sneakers that I've gotten in the last 2 years have not been through Nike. Do you know what I mean? Aside from ones that perhaps they might have sent me or gifted me, full disclosure. But, you know, they're not necessarily gifting me the ones that I'm going for. Do you right. know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm grateful, obviously, for every sport. I don't mean to sound spoiled. But obviously, there's ones that I love. So I have to go about my own means, calling people. Like, I'm entering raffles like everyone else. Like, it's not, you know, it's not an easy game. And it sucks that it's even a game now. It shouldn't yeah. be. It should just be this thing that we love and that we can put on and wear. I wear my sneakers. Yep. I'm like, my favorite example is these, which now I kind of feel like a dummy because I found out how much they're worth on the resale market. But I wear my freaking sneakers. Look at these. I freaking mm-hmm. dunk them. These are the Complex Con AF1.
Yeah, love them.
Literally, I've worn into the freaking ground because I wear my sneakers. And then I found out that they're worth like 10 G's now, which sucks.
That's insane.
But that's what low-key I'm like, how do I make them look new?
I think there's probably a TikTok video for that.
A little sneaker yeah, refurb somewhere.
Yeah, sneaker doctor or whatever. Like, send them. Like, I don't know, like, low-key, maybe I should sell them. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think about buying them to resell them. I think about, oh, I love these. I'm going to buy these. I'm going to rock these. I'm going to stunt in these. But that's not... I don't think that's the game these days.
No. And it's really unfortunate because... Again, it's robbing people of that experience. We had Mike Sykes on from the Kicks You Wear a couple episodes ago, and we were talking about the Trophy Room ones, right? And just that whole process. And as I said to Mike, it isn't even to the point that, like, if I go into a raffle, I'm expecting to win. That ain't the point. And, like, that's the point with, like, sneakers and all that. It's more like, why is this process so difficult? And why do I feel like it is inherently unfair from the jump, right? Like, that's so much of what this is. And then, to your point, you pull up Instagram and you see Kid X and motherfucker, how do you have 700 boxes already? Like, they literally just came out at 10 o'clock or today, and you already have 700 boxes of them. How is that possible?
They post the photo even before they drop.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's an issue, obviously, of backdooring. It's an issue of plugs. You know, look, it's not, I mean, life's not fair, right? You know, so it's hard for us to be over here, quote unquote, bitching about sneakers, but it's just when we've been in this industry for so long and to see the way it's shifted, and I think I said this in the article, like it's taken my love out of it. It sucks, you know, it just sucks.
No, I feel that. And I think for me as the consumer too, I mean, I know you see all the memes on Instagram, like, oh, another L, another sneaker drop. To your point, it's made me kind of not want to buy either. I mean, it's turned me off. And I think the Clubhouse room, I'd love to talk about that too, because I know there's been some great conversations on Clubhouse. A lot of conversation around how that's like taken away the user experience from Nike. Like, and Nike does so many amazing things, but do you think that this situation, even just from a general population, because this has expanded beyond the sneaker culture, right? Do you think that this is big enough to impact the perception of Nike, and where do we go from here?
No. You know, like at the end of the day, I mean, someone in one of the Clubhouse rooms the other day was saying we should boycott Nike, and I was like,
never going to happen. Never, yep.
Right.
Nike is a conglomerate. Nike is an iconic name and business within this industry. They're
a global behemoth.
Yep.
Beautiful way to say it. This issue was a blip on their radar.
Yep.
And if I've learned anything in the last few days about getting dragged on Twitter is that a few days later it goes away. So so it's like, it's going to go away. People are not going to stop. I mean, today there was a drop for Dunks that I saw people, you know, on Twitter. We're right back
to regular programming. Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, it's, nothing has changed. I mean, people are angry and yell. It feels like we're, you know, old man yells at cloud. Like, we're just what we're doing. We're just kind of like yelling and getting our anger out. And then the next day we're like, wait, but I do want these shoes. Let me try for it, even though I'm not going to get them, but I'm going to try. So no, I don't think anything is going to change. I think that this is just where we're at right now. And it is just the game, and if you choose to stay in, you stay in, and if you want to hop out, you hop out. It's just what it is, and that's just how life goes. Things change.
Yeah, I was telling Gabby at the top of the show that I talked to a footwear industry insider earlier today, and we were talking about it, and it's so interesting because we're so immersed in it, and because of who we curate to follow on our various social platforms, it seems like this is a huge deal, and it is within the scope of what we're looking at. But to your point, Tamara, in the larger Nike scope, it ain't a big deal, because as my insider told me, the average footwear consumer has zero idea that a resale market even exists. So this means nothing, right? And we know from talking to various folks, the collabs and the fancy shoes and nice shoes that we want, those aren't the ones that keep the lights on at Nike. It's the Tanjun and all these other shoes that like exist everywhere else in every other place that you can get access to. That's what drives the actual money at places like Nike and Adidas and wherever, right? It's those everyday things, not these special, small, segmented things that people within the space that we know care about.
Right. And let's also, I mean, I feel like Nike's been getting bashed these last couple of days. Let's not also forget the good that they've done. You know, I feel like Nike has done amazing work, especially with their social campaigns. You know, when every other brand was turning their back on Colin Kaepernick, they went to Colin Kaepernick and made a huge campaign with him and stood behind him. Even though the stock that day dropped significantly, there was the right wingers out there burning their Nikes in their trash cans. Like, how dare you stand with Colin Kaepernick? You know, like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, a lot of work, a lot of really wonderful work that's way more important than, I believe, than, you know, tackling a reseller.
Yeah.
Like, I think, you know, the depth of the work that they are doing in terms of spotlighting the injustices of the world is significantly more important than taking down a 15-year-old suburban kid who has the bots. Sorry.
No, you're right on that. And, you know, Gabby and I, we are big fans of Nike and Jordan Brand and all of our people over there. So we love all the work that they do within various communities. Before we get into America's favorite segment, Shoe and Tell, which is coming up next. Tamara, what is on the horizon for you? When are the people, or where are the people going to see you next?
I mean, I'm around, man. You just follow my social media. You see me. I'm out here. Like, I don't even know sometimes. Like, I mean, legitimately, like, I don't know. Like, I get a call one day and they're like, hey, we need you here. I'm like, all right, I'm there. Or, you know, I get a call from a brand and they're like, hey, we want to, you know, help produce this. I'm like, all right, cool. Let's do it. Like, I mean, that's kind of the scope of my job has changed a lot, especially with COVID. Mm-hmm. It's just become more broad. I guess before I would say I'm a TV host, and now it's, you know, I'm so much more than that, which I'm grateful for. Yeah, so just check out my social media and you can stay up to date with everything that I'm doing. I try to stay active. I feel like I'm really bad at social media.
I don't think so. I think I would warn the people, be careful about sliding in those DMs.
Yes, Gabby, please go there.
Blast, but it's always with love.
It is one of my favorite things to see, because especially when you do shoot or shoot, right? Like, because mm-hmm. I would not experience this because I'm a guy, but Gabby can speak to this. She always tells me, Trot, look at these DMs that I get. And I'm like, oh dear God, like, people are ridiculous. What are some of the funniest DMs that you've mm-hmm. gotten?
Well, COVID brought out the comedians. I thought, like, I was getting the, like, you know, if COVID don't take you out, can I?
That's pretty smooth, actually. Okay.
Those are the ones that I'll, you know, like, re-grab in my story and be like, I actually like this one. This one actually works, you know? Or, I had another funny one recently. It was like, are you Baby Yoda? And I was like, the hell does, and I was just like, yes, I'm Baby Yoda. And he's like, what did he say? He was like, good, because Baby Yoda won for me.
I love it. Get your mans, Gabby. Get your mans.
Why do I have to go get that mans? I don't want that mans.
But like, I appreciate someone that can make me laugh, right? Like, of course, I'm, you know, it doesn't work. I mean, like, that's... The laughing works. I'm sure what he was hoping would work didn't work. But I appreciate when they're funny, because, you know, there's some weirdos out there, and the weird ones are not as enticing to see.
No. And for the folks out there watching, there will not be any OnlyFans pages featuring specific, so stop sliding in there.
Well, no, they want my feet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, I mean a feet-focused OnlyFans.
Key, I told you, I've been out here doing a lot of hustle, so maybe the OnlyFans feet is not a bad idea.
That's next sneaker trend, is taking off the kicks.
Yeah. Oh my God, that would actually probably go, like, that would probably do really well on TikTok.
That would crush TikTok.
That would crush TikTok. Are you kidding? Oh my God. Well, look, if you're, the foot fetish people are a very passionate group. So I don't necessarily know that I would want to tailor my content to them, because I ain't ready.
That was the most PR way to word that. That was amazing.
I
love it.
I ain't ready. So, fellas, listen, Tamara just told you. I mean, you can slide in the DMs. At least be funny. You're not going to get anywhere, but at least you'll make her laugh. So, you know, good on you for that.
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say that, because low-key, I did, I mean, he's an ex-boyfriend now. Shout out to him. We're friends. We met his split of my DM. So it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility that it could work.
So, Tamara.
A classic film.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Exactly.
Well, listen, fellas, you know what to do. Anyway. Folks, get ready, because coming up next is America's favorite segment, presented by Another Lane, the premier digital marketplace for dope kicks. Stay tuned. What's up, guys? We are back, and it is time for America's favorite segment, Shoe and Tell, presented by Another Lane, the premier digital marketplace for dope kicks. Now, listen, y'all know we love, love, love Another Lane. Chad and Adina, husband and wife duo, they really, really do it right. You know, we talked about last segment the ills of the resale market and what we don't like about it. Everything that is good about sneaker community and resale, go over to anotherlane.com. Chad and Adina are here for the culture first. That is their primary thing. And then it's, hey, if people want to sell and do whatever, they got you on there. But it is about a community. It's about establishing those ties. All the reasons why you fell in love with sneakers in the first place. That's what they want to promote. It's a beautiful place. Check it out. AnotherLane.com. Now, Tamara, it is shoe and tell time. The floor is yours.
Woohoo. All right. Well, I'm going to start with my most recent sneaker that I got that I really, really wanted. And I always love also spotlighting women designers, especially when it comes to sneakers. So I'm pulling out the Ambushes. Dunks. Okay, so I'm already a huge fan of Yuna Ambush. I think she's so supremely talented. So I was really excited when she was doing her collaboration. And I just love the details on it. I don't know if you guys are.
Oh, yeah, we can see it. Yep.
I was going to say, I actually have a pair. Finally arrived. Yeah, I love them.
Again, like I said, like I love supporting women in the space. I have like all of Aleli May sneakers. I have Melody Asani's. Like anytime there's a woman designer that drops a pair of sneakers, I do my absolute best to try and support. But these are the most recent ones that I got that I am just really obsessed with. I think she did an amazing job. I just love how edgy her style is.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
With the Ambush Dunks, because I love that colorway as well, the black and the white, and the way that like they took the iconic style and you really like ran with it. What do you think about the pair that is all pink?
So I actually, Nike flew me out to New York for Fashion Week, actually right before COVID. It was like the last trip I took right before COVID. And that's where they unveiled those dunks, and they were the pink ones. And yep. I saw them in person. I loved them. Love them. And they were all pink, which generally is not my thing. But the style of them were so dope. And I love the actual design of it. I wasn't able to get the all pink ones, but admittedly, these are more wearable for me just because it goes more like these tones more along
with everything.
What I wear. Yeah. And I saw that she did a one of one of the Chicago, colorway and that, I want her to drop those so bad.
Yep.
Which actually leads me to my next shoe. Nice little segue there for you.
I like it.
Ayo.
So my Chicago ones.
Mm-hmm.
These to me are just obviously classic. And I think maybe perhaps what made me fall in love with sneakers. I can't remember. It was so long ago. But obviously, watching Michael Jordan play and these sneakers being, just like iconic. And I it was like a photo of him. I think it's the one where he's like jumping up and you see like his chains fly and he's wearing these. And I just like, even as a kid, I mean, that was before my time, but I remember that photo and like that always just stuck with me. And obviously we all loved Michael Jordan as an athlete. Mm-hmm. So I just always had these sneakers in my head. Like, as a kid, they were always in my head, like, oh, the Chicago ones. So when I was able to finally get my hands on them, and again, I wear them, FYI. Don't wear their sneakers. So it was just a special sneaker for me, and it's one of my favorite in my collection because, there's like a weird sentimental, sneaker value to them for me personally.
Not weird at all. They're wonderful. We love it.
And then again, I have so many and it's so hard to always choose. Like if I could, I would say I would just throw some out. Like the Unions are awesome. Mm-hmm. Being Black Cement threes
love
are great.
Love the threes.
Classic. Yep.
I mean, these are also I love these. Again, there's photos of MJ in these, like in the game. I love, love, love these, but I think the one I'm going to pull out and like truly show, and I'll tell you why, is these, the Travis Scott Air Force.
Oh, my favorite of all the Travis Scotts.
So I love these because I think if you love sneakers, maybe it's just me, but like you low-key design them in your head too. Like if I could design sneakers, I always think about like what I would design. And I love sneakers that change, right? Yeah. So like, You think about, these things being able to come off and on. You look at, like, the jewelry tones on there. These you can change as well. And I also am a big fan of gum sole. I'm, like, a sucker for gum sole. Nice. So I love the sneaker. This kind of, like, started Travis's whole foray, really. So it's cool that this is, like, one of the first ones before they became,
They are now, yeah.
Like, obviously we knew that Travis Scott was going to be a big mover and shaker in the sneaker game. I don't necessarily know that we thought he was going to be the mover and shaker the way that he is.
Yeah.
But so this for me, and I love like little, you know, just like little details, like, you know, this being upside down, like yep. the air. Like I love little details like that on sneakers. So I think that's why I pulled this one out. A, because I love it. I love the silhouette, but just like the little details of the changeability of it. And, you know, you see a lot of sneakers now where they do the tearaway. Mm-hmm. So actually I have, this was a collaboration between Shoe Surgeon and Twix, but this is like one of the tearaway.
Oh, cool.
You like scratch this part off, underneath it is a whole different color.
That's awesome.
But I have like minor OCD, so I don't scratch, but I love that it's there.
I have that, minor though. OCD, hilarious. Tamara, what are your favorite silhouettes?
I mean, the Jordan 1. I mean, how can I not say the Jordan 1? It's literally where, for me, where everything began. And I think a lot of people still take influence from this today. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, definitely the Jordan 1. It's like my favorite. I think it's just a perfect silhouette.
Love it.
That's why it's so timeless. Completely agree.
It's a classic, man. Mm-hmm. Stands the test of time. Mm-hmm. Folks, this has been super fun. Tamara, tell the people where they can find you.
You can find me at Tamara Dia across all my socials, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok. I don't really TikTok, but maybe you guys can convince me to.
Clubhouse.
Yeah, exactly. Clubhouse. Oh, we didn't really talk too much about Clubhouse, but yeah, Clubhouse.
And folks, you know where to find us. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, SoundCloud. We are, of course, part of the Count the Dinks family and on the Bomb feed. So you can find us there. And we are at Kicks and Shit Show across all platforms. That includes Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We are all, we have one. And TikTok. We're on TikTok too.
Don't follow us on TikTok. Do not feed his obsession, guys. Do not.
Until next time, folks. Peace.